Emergency evacuation procedure. I think everybody knows we're not expecting alarm, and if somebody could wait long enough to see that I've gone out, it would be appreciated, but if not, there we are. Apologies for absence. Who have we heard from, Will?
We've had apologies from Councillor Cousins, Councillor Frank, Councillor Dykeel, and Gareth Mills from Grant Thornton.
So, if you add that to what we have, are we missing Ed Jowett? So is that all? And Jim Bailey. Right, good. So there are, at the latest count, four of us. Jolly good. Quality. Minutes of the meeting held on the 21st of March. I will move them. Would you like to do your... Oh, I was looking forward to you doing that. It's a normal knee-jerk reaction. Thank you, Will. I'd like to, unless anybody's any comments on them as they are. Who was here? Will was here. Joy was here. So there's three of us. That's all right. I'd like to move an amendment, and I don't know whether you've seen it on your emails or whether or not you've got a paper copy of it. Have you got it, Will? No, surely not. You've been sat at home all afternoon waiting for the email to drop in your inbox. But there's a paper copy for you to speed up the process. I don't think in the amendment I am proposing there is anything contentious. It's not a criticism what was there. There's nothing wrong in the minutes, but these things were said, and particularly the climate change one. I don't think that amendment is recorded anywhere else if we don't record it here. So I would like a seconder to that amendment to the minutes if we could have one. Oh, two of you now. That will do it again. Yes, please. No. It's all right. I didn't spot it, unfortunately, until yesterday or this afternoon, which was unfair on everybody. And thank you, Will, for sorting out the wording of it. So if nobody's got anything to add to that, can we vote on it, please?
That's three votes for and one abstention. That's carried.
That's carried. And can we now vote on accepting the minutes? As amended.
Again, that's three votes for and one abstention. That's carried.
Thank you. Urgent business. I have no urgent business at all. Anybody else want anything raised in urgent business? No? Good. Decorations of interest. Sounds like a customs officer. Anybody got anything to declare? No? Chair's announcements. I knew I was going to drop a clangor at some point. We wrote, and I had a response back to them, but I haven't got a copy with me. I don't know if anybody else has got one. And that was the reply from the DWP. And we asked them, in relation to Universal Credit, what was going on with it. Because they moved from telling us it was an average of 35 days, and we asked them for the breakdown. And then they said it's a minimum of 35 days, which seemed worse. So we asked them for the breakdown. And they have now, under a Freedom of Information request, nationally, not our partners with whom we are working locally, nationally under a Freedom of Information request, they have replied that, and the numbers are off the top of my head, but something like 82% are done on target. And they don't tell us what the target is. And a week later, that goes up to 84, a week later, 86, etc. So a range of numbers like that. And it is most unsatisfactory. And whether between now and whatever's happening in early May, I get the chance to do it, I will. And if I don't, I'm sorry I haven't. But it needs a reply back to them, and I'll talk to Tony Galloway about replying back to them, telling them that's totally unsatisfactory. It isn't answering what we would do. And in the new year, I think there is a case for this committee, new local government year, I think there is a case for this council and or overview and scrutiny committee to look into what is going, because we should, for the residents of Rydale, be able to say to them how long a benefits claim will take, what it should do, etc., rather than it be this wonderfully woolly figure. But I can't do anything about it in the time scale, and Freedom of Information request means it takes them 3 weeks to come back to us, which in its own right is not acceptable. Sorry for not having a copy of the sheet with me, but I've given you 98% of what's on the papers. There might be something missing. So that's the end of Chair's announcements. We now move on to Safer Rydale, progress with delivering community safety plan. And we deferred that from the last meeting, and we have Martin Dennison here to report.
Thank you,
Martin.
The Safer Rydale delivery plan was created amended to reflect very kindly Rydale District Council support of North Yorkshire Police Control Strategy. North Yorkshire Police Control Strategy identifies the threats to community safety from antisocial behaviour, community safety issues and crime within the North Yorkshire area under the heading Protecting Vulnerable Communities and Protecting Vulnerable Individuals. In separating threat, harm and risk under those two overarching headers, we could identify threat to individuals. For instance, cyber-enabled sexual crime, personal fraud, offences under the prevent strategy, so radicalisation, modern slavery and human trafficking, child abuse, neglect and child sexual exploitation, domestic abuse, missing people, stalking and harassment. They are crimes particular to the individual. They are also crimes that tend to affect communities particularly. They are crimes which we are all very aware of impacting the wider UK society, whether that grooming gangs in various places of the country, people being missing, and a proliferation of missing people, and homelessness, the rise in cyber-enabled sexual crime, sexting and grooming online. The other heading is protecting vulnerable communities. That encompasses road traffic collisions, border vulnerabilities, serious and organised acquisitive crime, drug production and supply, and organised immigration crime. It's remiss of me perhaps to have to refer to this, but I wanted to make sure I didn't miss any of them. That identifies those communities, those offences for which communities in general become susceptible, particularly in terms of elements of rural crime and cross-border crime, and in relation to road traffic collisions and fatal road traffic collisions. They are offences for which, I suppose, Rydale, not that Rydale's synonymous, but particularly vulnerable to those areas. In having those two overarching areas, we're able to address and problem solve, but we're all also able to address changing trends and patterns in crime, which are evolving with society, a digital age, and also an age in which we identify the impact that crimes can have on individuals and how that in itself can affect society. Rydal District Council and the community team were particularly supportive in taking those areas that we had identified as an organisation as threat, harm and risk and putting them into their own community safety plan, together with issues particularly important and particular to Rydale as well, fly tipping in areas of nighttime economy, etc. After consultation with the community team, an action plan and a partnership plan were created. The action plan obviously mirrors elements of the partnership plan, mirrors the results that we can put to the plan and the success that we can measure against the plan. Some of that success is in empirical data, albeit, as we discussed previously, some of that is harder to get than previously. Some of the information that we can get and the evidence to put towards our success in the plan comes through more anecdotal data, but what I can provide today in terms of evidence of the way in which we've conducted multi-agency and joint working. I can't give you the data on multi-agency problem solving and joint working because it doesn't exist. We don't create it. It's anecdotal. We have created structures as a result of the plan, some of those fortnightly, some of them 6-weekly. We have, I'll go into it in more detail as the time comes around, but we now have effective joined up working, not only with the council, but with our partners in housing provision, with mental health provision, and with child and adult social care, as well as North Yorkshire Fire and Rescue Service. And we have regular meetings, mostly to address safeguarding and vulnerability within the area, but also it is a broader panorama in terms of the threat, harm and risk and what we can each do. That's reflected in the action plan. I don't know how you'd like me to progress from here, Chair, because I can give you the... I can start working through those elements of the control strategy to give you some idea and picture in terms of how we've achieved against that.
I think that would be useful. The other strand to put in, and I'm quite happy whichever way you want to go with it, is that in relation to the report, members will have questions, but I think if we go into what you're saying first, and then go back to it if you want, whichever.
I drafted a very short, you'll be pleased to know, very short police report, just giving a picture of the last three consecutive year-on-year data. And then I have the information that I can give the results of work that we've conducted set against the plan, and then I'm open to any questions, any and all questions.
Yeah, that seems fine.
Looking at the Rydal District crime figures year on year, these are 1st of April to the 31st of March, and 2016-17 to 2017-18 to 2018-2019 have seen increases across the board in many areas of crime. The areas, I suppose the areas that we've seen a reduction in crime, I'll start with, are arson and criminal damage and sexual offences. Arson and criminal damage fell to 244 offences last year. Sexual offences fell to 57 in the period. Now, in relation to that crime, it has seen a steady rise in recorded crime of 24%. It's been matched by a year-on-year fall in recorded antisocial behaviour. So together with the crime figures, what you see is a significant reduction in antisocial behaviour that goes alongside it. So where crime rose from 1,587 offences to 1,609 last year to this year, antisocial behaviour fell from 1,094 offences to 829 offences. And likewise, PSW, which is public safety and welfare incidents, they include many instances of poaching or industrial accidents or sometimes concern for safeties and missing from homes, fell from 3,735 instances to 2,320. So against the non-crime incidents that officers attend, falling, crime rose. Now, part of that is down to the fact that incidents that we previously didn't crime, we now crime. And by example, I'll give you a couple of examples. A third part, and this comes under data in crime data integrity improvements and ethical crime recording, where previously we wouldn't crime a matter that hadn't been directly reported or couldn't be proven. If we have information from a third party that a crime has occurred, then we're obligated to crime it. An example, that a referral was made from a social worker into one of our domestic violence meetings. A social worker had a member of the community report to her. She had been the victim of sustained domestic violence by a partner but was unwilling to report it to the police. That was fed into a meeting held by a partner agency and was then fed into us as a report, and that matter was crimed as domestic violence, even though we crimed it with a proviso we would never contact the victim because that was against her wishes. So we are working to criteria by which we are criming matters. Whereas if I go back not only the almost 20 years that I've been in the force, but 5 years ago, unless we had evidence that it had happened or we actually had a report that it had happened, we wouldn't ordinarily have crimed it. That has seen a short-term increase in certain areas, particularly violent crime, malicious communications, whereas we might have written that off at source 5 years ago and said, change your Facebook profile or block certain people or change your mobile phone number. In some instances, we crime those matters that we previously did not. That will show that some areas that might have been covered under antisocial behaviour categorisation or public safety and welfare have now appear, but they appear in the category of crime. So the increase in 24% of crime is either an increase we didn't previously have or an increase we've always had but didn't previously record. Further to that, we have been working hard in improving crime data integrity. The Her Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary was critical last year of the way in which North Yorkshire Police didn't crime matters that they could have crimed, and that our adherence to national crime recording standards, whilst not unethical, wasn't in keeping with accepted practice. Obviously, we've all undergone training and in terms of our responsibilities under crime data recording. Some offences which have seen an increase, particularly in fraud, particularly in areas pertaining to protecting vulnerable communities, so including that cyber-enabled sexual crime and fraud and areas of domestic violence, have seen an increase because we've placed additional focus on them. You can't shine a torch or a light under a rock you've turned over without being prepared to find things there. People have increased confidence in reporting their victimhood, and rightly so. We hope we have, that Rydale is not only a safe place, but it should be a place in which people can report crime without fear of stigma or without fear of not being believed. And that is a culture that North Yorkshire Police has moved to. Our multi-agency partners do have a role in this. They have also assisted us in safeguarding people against offences of fraud and bringing multi-agency partners together to protect people in the safeguarding the context of safeguarding. Now, I'll go through the different headings under protecting vulnerable communities and protecting individuals. Well, individuals and then communities, if that's in order. Mm. The first area is under the way in which Rydale District Council and North Yorkshire Police have tackled cyber-enabled sexual crime. The action being awareness training and presentations to be undertaken. Safer Neighbourhood Beat Managers and PCSOs have a schedule of attendances at primary and secondary school in order to discuss online safety and the threat from cyber-enabled sex offenders, if you like, to prey on the vulnerable. The education or the input is delivered at an age-appropriate level both to primary and secondary school children, and that has been that is a programme that we've undertaken for a couple of years now, but we continue to undertake it. That is supported by the Rydale District Council community team and by the local schools MAPS, multi-agency problem solving within schools, the schools collaborative. We engage with each of the, or most of the school heads in order to inform and then introduce that training and education. We conduct that training and education in other educational establishments, including out of schools clubs, summer clubs, and some of the youth clubs as well. In relation to the next item or the next area of concern will be fraud and personal fraud. There have been awareness raising sessions conducted, and the banking protocol has featured within North Yorkshire Police Crime and Community Safety roadshows. There's been extensive media and social media campaigns relating to banking protocols and financial scams. If it's all right, just for the purposes of expediency, if I go through how I've dealt with them all, the banking protocol training. So the awareness that we raised also fed into training that we conducted within North Yorkshire Police and Rydale District Council. So training in relation to the banking protocol was rolled out to all staff in the Scarborough and Rydale areas and has been put effectively into practice on a number of occasions. And I'll give you a couple of instances. The training has been rolled out to the extent to which Rydale boasts two fraud ambassadors. Two of our PCSOs are trained not only to deliver banking protocol and fraud training and educate about scams, but they and other members of the Safe Neighbourhood team conduct follow-up visits to victims. Two instances in particular will give you an indication of how impactful we've been. One gentleman was contacted by the court service telling him that he owed £13,000 and that he was going to be have his house repossessed if he didn't pay, and he was told to go to a bank in the Rydale area to draw the money out. The bank, having had the banking protocol training, contacted North Yorkshire Police. Home visit was done, and the scammers contacted via telephone to find out whether or not they were scammers or in fact members of the court service. A scam was detected, the individuals couldn't be identified, but the aftercare was important. This is a gentleman of advancing years who had not only personal visits by North Yorkshire Police staff, but cocoon watch built up, so his neighbours were aware that he might be receiving visitors who were unexpected and to contact us. The second individual, a gentleman who was aware of the banking protocol, spoke to by his family about it, wanted to withdraw thousands of pounds to send to a female in Africa who wanted airfare to come over. Wouldn't believe anyone, but was intercepted on the street. One of my PCSOs was aware of had half the story, but was able to go with him to the bank, speak to the bank, and identify that he was the victim of intended fraud. Several years ago, these things might actually have escaped our notice, particularly with the impact of the banking protocol on high street banks. We have daily reports of scams taking place. They affect the most vulnerable in our society, and they're abhorrent crimes. Quite often, in many instances, we don't get anywhere near the perpetrators because they operate remotely. There are elements to this to which North Yorkshire Police has not necessarily fed in, but I will discuss those. The prevent strategy, for instance, is led by safeguarding and housing at Ryedale District Council. The point one, to continue chair of the local delivery group and promote active membership across stakeholders, which is ongoing, to provide annual counter-terrorism local plan intelligence update through community engagement, which is done, to provide RAP sessions when and where needed in order to identify partner agencies and ensure effective communication on prevent issues is disseminated across the district to our partners, and develop a local community engagement plan to disseminate information. Those over 100 officers have been trained in providing the counter-terrorism sessions, and the community engagement plan was completed in September. There are regular prevent meetings within this building. It cannot be underestimated the threat to the community through radicalisation. It is regrettable that the greatest threat to Ryedale, and I say threat perhaps with a small t, small case t, is from extreme right wing. We've seen that with the number of National Front posters which have been posted around the Moulton and Norton area, and on the B1257 at Newgate Bank, I believe. What I can report is that a man was found posting one of the posters, has been identified, arrested, and is currently on bail under investigation for dissemination of extreme right wing, racially offensive material. We actively engage with our partners to identify potentials for radicalisation. The attendees at the Prevent meeting are from the broadest range of public sector and multi-agency partner, and they are very effective in the dissemination of information. The next area concerns substance-related crime and antisocial behaviour. In terms of the continued proactivity and visibility within our community, the community team have facilitated the holding of CAP group meetings within the Ryedale area and drive much of the cooperation with our multi-agency partners. Ryedale District Council take the lead in how we deal with all most of our multi-agency partners and our engagement, and we're very grateful for it. They are the experts in the field of bringing people together from all these areas, and we certainly don't work in silos anymore. Under this heading is also facilitating the use of multi-agency forums, using partnership decision-making models, but as importantly as any of them, using antisocial behaviour legislation to deal with those causing antisocial behaviour in the Ryedale area. Training in antisocial behaviour legislation has been undertaken within the Ryedale District Council community team and within, it's bread and butter to my Safe Enabled team. And whilst legislation has been acted upon in relation to low-level offending, for instance, and acceptable behaviour contracts for nuisance youths. We say nuisance youth, it's an old, outdated term, but youths who cause concern within our communities with low-level crime and antisocial behaviour, they are subject now to acceptable behaviour contracts, which are drawn up not only with the community team, the policing team, which they traditionally have been, but with consultation with the Ryedale District Council community team. Where the community team here at Ryedale House have taken the lead is in the compilation of evidence for community behaviour orders, one of which was served against an individual from the Northern Ryedale area, habitual a drinker and offender for antisocial behaviour. It was a creation of an order to restrict his movement within Ryedale. That was with consultation with legal departments here at Ryedale District Council, and that is an area that we can't operate without the community team's assistance. The In terms of coordinating wider partnership support, we do conduct, we do attend fortnightly multi-agency problem-solving meetings. We had one today. It wasn't as well attended, which was fortunate because we had a broom cupboard on the first floor, I think. They're normally held in meeting room one, and they will have as many attendees, you know, as many as 15 attendees. We will look at anyone with a vulnerability or any area with a vulnerability which is referred into the multi-agency problem-solving team. Those can be individuals who are victim of domestic abuse, those individuals who are regularly missing from home, those susceptible to offences or vulnerability or exploitation by members of the community. Up to 15 multi-agency partners, from fire service to community mental health team, can feed into the problem solving of that individual. It's an incredibly joined up process that is replicated in areas like Scarborough and York, but it is a tried and tested and very modern way in which we identify we don't all have the monopoly on good ideas, and that unless we pool resources and information, we're unable sometimes to get to the bottom of those problems. That is fortnightly. And very few, it's true that very few things appear to slip through the net, but we wouldn't know, would they? Because we wouldn't be aware of them if they did. The next area, I suppose, would be the identify offenders involved in the disruption of illegal drug supply and the disruption. We have, for the policing team, have executed a number of warrants in the Moulton Norton areas, and that has led to the arrest and conviction of a number of individuals for the supply of controlled drugs. They have been intelligence-led operations. They conduct actually throughout the whole of the entirety of the Rydale area. I'll go into another of those shortly. There is mention in the report of new psychoactive substances. It was entered into here almost with a bit of future-proofing. At the time at which this report was at its point of inception, new psychoactive substances were an emerging threat, which I don't think we've necessarily seen at Rydale. And they are the ingestion of substances not intended, by which I mean incense and items which are sold almost as a kind of incense or substances and things that come in packets from the Chinese market, but they're used for ingestion where they're not intended to be, and the chemical content can cause all kind of psychoactive responses. That is a prevalent problem in some areas of the UK, but also Scarborough had endemic issues a few years ago. It was included in this plan in the hope, you know, almost in the expectation that we might see it, and we haven't really. That's not to say that we're not grateful, obviously. I'll move on, if I may, to safeguarding children and adults at risk. This has been fed into by Kim Robertshaw, Safeguarding and Housing, to say that, I'll go into the progress update, that seven safeguarding training sessions have been delivered so far since April 2018. That's a total of 113 staff and members have attended these sessions. They cover safeguarding adults at risk, and children are level one. The taxi driver training was delivered on the 31st of the 5th. The 7th of the 7th last year, and the 19th of the 9th, and more are planned in the near future. Taxi driver training sessions involve, it's our acknowledgement that many modes of transport are used in order to traffic people or in order to transport people against the will, or they might see some exploitation, and in fact we've paid dividends because they've reported to us criminal activity and drug use. Turning the page, domestic awareness session was held on the 10th of October at Rydale District Council, and events have been held at Scarborough to which Rydale District Council staff have attended. There are now services provided by and on behalf of Rydal District Council for young people and children now affected by domestic violence. They are creating a confidence programme for particularly young people, and Crucial Crew is ongoing, getting into schools to assist in educating and diverting young people who may be susceptible to becoming involved in crime. I'll move on, if I may, to stalking and harassment. The instances of stalking and harassment are brought up at our multi-agency problem-solving meetings for discussing, for discussion and the sharing of information. Stalking and harassment very much has North Yorkshire Police focus on it, upon it at the moment. We have training programmes that are currently rolling out, but anyone who features as a victim of stalking and harassment is now automatically raised to profile at multi-agency problem-solving meetings. Previously, mechanisms that we've used for harassment, for instance, police information notice or harassment information notices, are being phased out because they're a bit of paper that don't really protect anyone from harm. As a result of which, more affirmative action in terms of arresting take place rather than warnings. I'll then move on to road traffic collisions. Again, not the Yorkshire Fire and Rescue Service take the lead on this, but if you'll I do have a couple of inputs into it. I don't have all the progress from themselves, but in terms of enforcement activity in relation to preventing road traffic collisions, enforcement activities conducted daily, intelligence products are disseminated from our intelligence departments to road policing officers based here at Moulton. We have seized dozens of vehicles in the last 12 months through intelligence-led policing. We also are involved in community events that are held in collaboration with our North Yorkshire Police volunteers and Rydale District Council, and they have joint community safety roadshows at which you know, members of the public have the opportunity to come and see you know, and be educated in terms of the reasons for certain enforcement of seatbelts and mobile phones, etc. We do run still, and will continue to, two speed camera vans out of Moulton Police Station. I don't have the... you'll have to forgive me on the figures here. There are over 300 accepted sites for the speed camera van in the Scarborough-Rydale district, and 192... to which the mobile police bike, they have a bike with a camera on it now, to which that can deploy. We're still recruiting community speed watch volunteers for some of the outlying villages to try and maximise the opportunity to engage with people and educate them in terms of speed enforcement. Border vulnerabilities and crime, I'm getting towards the end now, you'll all be pleased to know. Border vulnerability and cross-border crime. In terms of the activity that we've taken to disrupt and detect, I am the single point of contact, or the problem owner, I suppose, for cross-border crime, the whole Scarborough-Rydale district. We are fortunate, or have been fortunate, in that last year we might have been particularly affected by cross-border crime, whereas this year... less so. Cross-border crime is an umbrella term. It can cover everything, and we've discussed it. We've discussed it previously, but it can cover everything from sheep rustling to quad bike thefts to poaching to bringing drugs across county lines. One example in terms of our disruption: a drug supply chain from Stokesley to Helmsley, whereby a drug dealer in Helmsley was receiving drugs, and there was a money laundering operation which is still under investigation. That was intelligence led, and we conducted a series of warrants here in Stokesley simultaneously. Cannabis farm that we detected in the Ampleforth area, which would come under this remit. But most satisfyingly, or actually disturbingly, depending upon your perspective, an individual who was wanted for 15 offences of burglary in the North Yorkshire area was detained at Norton Beadlam
just before Christmas, having committed 6 burglaries in Norton overnight. Part of a Cleveland organised crime group, he and another individual had stolen 2 quad bikes and a whole number of steel saws and chainsaws. Most of the information we get, obviously, with rural crime, because of the rurality, is after the event. We do conduct disruption, we do have operations which run, and we do and try and create and get as tight a grip on the road networks as possible. But anyone who knows north of the A170 or south of the A64 will know it is needle in the haystack time, and I could have 2 or 3 times the number of officers I've got, and it would make virtually no difference. However, it's the intelligence-led policing aspect of that. Prior to making the arrest, prior to Christmas for the individual, he was still at large in fields, and we knew who it was. Intelligence had told us who it was, and we were able to identify him. Like I say, the disappointing thing was he was wanted for 15 offences, not in our area, and we might, had there been more impetus, arguably, we might not have had 6 victims. Rydale District Council are signatories to the local North Yorkshire Police cross-border policing plan. They have to be because, you know, I asked them to. But they have supported us. They have supported us in terms of everything they can do in crime prevention and community safety and the local public engagement that we have. And we have received quite a lot of support from them. We do have Monday morning meetings at which we invite members of the community team to educate our patrol strategy. Again, it's accepting that police don't have the monopoly of ideas, and we do have a grasp of the geography. But sometimes the community team members, of which there are 7, I believe, now covering all the areas, are able to tell us snippets of information that otherwise we might not get and educate our patrol strategy. And there we are.
Thank you very much. That's been very useful, particularly the references to particular things that tell us what it's been. I've got 2 thoughts. One is going back low 20 years ago, a woman being dragged, and I mean dragged, by her hair up a pavement and into a house. And the police, seeing the end of this, said, "We can't do anything about that. It's a domestic." Now, that, I was down at the police station yelling and screaming and whatever else and trying to persuade them in every way known to man, and I got nowhere. Now, crime figures, once we've got that clear crime then, that wasn't on the figures then, onto the crime now, crime has gone up. That's a ludicrous way of doing numbers, but it has gone up, and quite rightly so. The one that I'm confused about is bank fraud. Now, I don't know whether I'm hearing the wrong stories around it, but there's a general muttering on money programmes or no, whatever, or there was a month ago before I became a hermit, that if you were frauded into giving somebody your code, your password, your whatever, and then suddenly realise what had happened because you rang the bank and they said, "No, we don't know anything about this," by which time some or all of it, the money was on its way. 2 or 3 people were saying, "We went down to the local police station," Lord knows where it was in the country, "and reported it, and they said, 'No, that is the fraud office,' or whatever it was." Is that accurate, or are they been unlucky, or are we luckier in North Yorkshire, or?
One of the previous answers, or one of the previous ways in which we would have dealt with that, would have been to refer people to Action Fraud.
That's the one.
Because if the trick or the fraud or the scam affects the mind of the individual and it's money is transferred electronically, then in many instances they'd be reimbursed, and particularly I think with the element of vulnerability, that's increasingly likely, but I wouldn't like to comment how likely, having not been a victim. So we would previously have referred people to Action Fraud. And that's not to say it was in the too hard bracket. I think it's
it was more to do with the fact that was accepted practice. Yeah. I think the world has changed, and there will be instances in which people give details away, for instance, PIN numbers, etc. But particularly the banking protocol was designed to protect the particularly vulnerable and those who would be particularly affected by this. Referring to action fraud, to be quite frank, doesn't really cut the mustard. It particularly when the scam affects the individual, but the people we're talking about are physically withdrawing money rather than transferring it as well. These are people of advancing years who don't do a lot of internet banking, and the scams are designed for them to physically interact.
Two of these three were young professionals, doctors, and I think the other one was a lawyer, and they called into the local police station to give all the details, etc., over, and referred to, and I couldn't remember the name of it, referred to action fraud. And if you have joined up partnership working between Rydale District Council and the police, or the police and action fraud, if you think it should be going to action fraud, you would think the police would have been doing it. But I get the impression that you're saying North Yorkshire has moved on from just referring it to action fraud, which is good news. And again, if it is the case, North Yorkshire police are at the forefront of the change.
I'd like to think there's a national change. But again, I think it's that like I say, times have changed, and quite often we don't have the kind of young professional fraud reported to us. What we tend to find are the more vulnerable people reporting, because they're not a stereotype, obviously, but they might be the ones who need the money most.
But it's a joined up bit that's the
our fraud investigation teams have a number of contacts, not only with action fraud but in banks themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And banks are particularly a number of the banks, I understand, are particularly on board in terms of the information that they can provide us.
Yeah, that's you might be changing nationally, but it does sound as though North Yorkshire is ahead of that, at the front of that change. By the sound of it. Well, always, of course, I understand that. Any questions or comments, anybody? Well,
you've talked a lot, Martin, about effective joined up working as being something that actually is, and long list of things, and great, of all the meetings there are and people coming together and all the rest of it. I've got a specific issue in that 4 years ago I was out campaigning in a ward in a town, and issues about policing weren't raised. This time I'm out in a ward that's very rural, and 50% of the people I'm talking to are raising issues about policing and safety, which has really sort of hit me straight between the lines, straight between the eyes. And the message I'm getting is that, because I say to them about all this stuff I'm aware of, and they don't believe me. So the question really is about how do we get the message across to people that effective joined up working is something that is having benefits, or importantly, why do you think it's not getting across to people?
I think we are... I think sometimes we're victims, not of our own success, but maybe the geography and the area that we're in which sometimes you don't see crime, so you don't see it's very difficult to quantify the effect of disruption and crime prevention. Crime prevention, in many ways is terrible, because we can't put a product in front of someone and say we've able to... So sometimes people don't see the impact. In my village, and I'm a rural village in northern Rydale, my wife regularly complains to me that she doesn't see a police officer. She regularly complains.
To one police officer.
Oh, no, she's sick of the sight of me. But she regularly complains that we don't have speed enforcement in our village, and why can't I do something about it? Because if anyone could, I should be able to. Now, I think sometimes we don't see police officers because we're very lucky,
and we don't have the necessity to. I'd like to see them, but we don't. In terms of how we reach outlying areas as well, we're in a funny time in society in which, if you'd spoken to me a few years ago about how we get the message out to communities, it would be with a bobby on the beat, or it would be with a vehicle going through the village and stopping, we'd have a surgery. We are on the cusp of being a society which is almost exclusively social media driven, where my interaction with you will be over some talk group or via some social platform. And we're in that strange area between, and I'll try and give you a kind of analogy to this, which is we are looking at, it was suggested in a meeting that I was in by someone in the business side of North Yorkshire Police, that they are creating virtual PCSOs. It will be a PCSO at the end of a social media platform, whom if you have an issue regarding community, community crime or antisocial behaviour issue, you'll be able to talk to a PCSO. And the point I made to this individual was, aside from the fact that the demographic of North Yorkshire, and I stand to be corrected, but I suspect it's slightly higher than maybe in a metropolitan area in terms of age, that many of them might not have the kind of online profile that some of us are trying to avoid, and that some people don't even have 4G or broadband. I know my own village has only got fibre optic, I think, this year, which is later than some of the other areas. So I think the thing is there's an awful lot of confusion or uncertainty as to what is the best way in which to get messages across to members of the community, because it's been put out centrally. It needs to be on platforms, on technological platforms, and we're not there yet. So what message I've been trying to put out via the medium of CAP group meetings, we still hold CAP group meetings at Pickering, Malton Norton and Sherburn Rillington. The CAP group meeting at Pickering will turn out 20. It's very well attended. The one at Malton last turned out 5. And I think 4 of those were officers or community team members. And Rillington Sherburn's quite well attended as well. And some of it is getting back to those old fashioned ways of getting out a message, which is face to face. And I attend all of those I attend all of them. And part of that is the old-fashioned way, face-to-face, which still appeals to an awful lot of people. I think there's also, maybe I might be critical of North Yorkshire Police generally here, but my experience is, if I have, if there's 10 shed burglaries on one of the estates in Scarborough, there's a very low level of attention given to it, because there is an expectation in some of our metropolitan areas that crime is not an appreciated but part of life. If I get one shed burglary in one village on the 170 or up at Farndale or so, the impact it has on the psyche of that small, potentially insular community is significant. And that, so it's economies of scale, really. You don't have a lot of crime, but what you can affect you adversely.
If I may, Chair, yeah, that's sure. Exactly, that last sentence encapsulates the issue, I think, Martin, which is because whether it's Langdale End or Bickley or where it is, yeah, there's one event and it doesn't get solved, then the 50 people in that village, well, they didn't solve that thing for whatever, yeah, and it's actually how we try to get the message across that doesn't mean it's failing completely. It just means that you can't always deal with the individual case. I know there's not a solution. I'm just waving a flag that says, I think the more thought we can give to how we get this message out to more remote places, the better.
Yeah, I accept that. I also accept the fact that we have to manage expectations. I have had the sentence uttered to me, and I won't say by whom, that we have to make our communities more resilient to the threat of crime. Now, I don't necessarily see that as acceptable. We can't say to our communities, you must be more resilient. We just have to get across to people in the nicest and most acceptable way possible that you're still very lucky, and it is a fine balancing act, and it is something that, like I say, is a regular feature of policing in this area. We are still lucky when you look at the number of crimes we've got. Yeah. But as someone who, up until last year before it started affecting me, reviewed every single crime in every week at Rydale, all 120 of them, that we have finite amount of resources and time, and we do the best that we can with them.
Thank you. Joey?
Yeah. Thank you. On the measuring progress, the collection of data and things, do you look back at, and can you ask questions to collect whether you can prevent, I mean, I don't mean prevent in the sense with the radicalisation stuff, but, for example, I think under domestic violence, often in cities, when there's been a football match on a Saturday, can go up if depending on which team wins. Is there a sort of a direct correlation to sort of certain crimes because of certain things in this area, or is that too complicated to sort of put into a pie chart or something like that?
It's a good question, and obviously there are indicators that point to the likelihood of certain crimes occurring. In relation to domestic violence, incidents, just by example, everyone who is, when a domestic violence incident is reported to the police, and I go back to a point that you made earlier, Chair, in relation to domestic violence, I previously, when I joined 19, nearly 20 years ago, I'd been to a domestic violence, a house of domestic violence, and a report where no party would say anything, and it was the case of, if we have to come back, one of you is coming in. And thankfully, we've moved away from that era. When officers attend domestic violence, they are obligated in all cases to complete Form 253, but it is a report of domestic violence. They are categorised high, medium and low risk. All high risk fed into a multi-agency forum. Mm-hmm. All medium and low medium risk are also looked at to look at what are the push-pull factors, what are the aggravating factors, and we do domestic violence follow-ups. In relation to other elements of crime, yes. By example, it was mentioned earlier, it has been mentioned earlier in relation to knife crime, an area which is obviously, thankfully, not very prevalent in Rydale. North Yorkshire Police Operation Divan was an operation which was designed to look at those children, particularly children and young people in education systems or known to social services who are have been excluded from school or have expressed particular fascination with knives or who have a particular position within a status, not a gang, because we don't really suffer from gang culture, fortunately, but within elements within society. And it's early intervention with those individuals and teachers and social workers to divert them and conduct engagement with them to try and get them try and divert them away from any possible threat with knives. So there is preventative work we can do right across the spectrum. A lot of it comes down to time and and intelligence.
Just to comment on that, yeah, I mean, you can have possibly homes where there is domestic violence, children are there. Do you get to speak to the schools where the children, I can't remember the name of the people that look after, I can't think of the name now, that look after the most vulnerable in the school sometimes, the Telltale Child, sorry?
PRU.
Oh, I don't know what that is. Pastoral care, yeah. Where they maybe haven't got the right uniform, they get separated and put in isolation, and then there's a chip on the shoulder, etc. And then that manifests itself. So if we could start, do you get in touch with schools about that, or is it just when you're going in to do your talks, or are you in direct contact with them?
The Schools Collaborative are a... I believe it's fortnightly, where single points of contact on my policing team, PCSOs are identified to a particularly Northern Collaborative, the Lady Lumley School and juniors, and I think we've just got Norton School on board because we have had a lot of good work with Moulton. We have early intervention with those schools in terms of the collaborative, and that goes down to the level of children in poverty and identifying the economic right down to economic forces.
I think that's everybody. I've one comment to make on your comment about police speeding in. Speeding in your village and not having police or not seeing a police officer frequently enough. Traffic calming measures were a long battle and were eventually in place, and the speed there has gone down dramatically. It's still exceeding on occasions, but it's gone down dramatically on what it was. And that was a long wrangle of getting the figures as to what the speeds were. I think it came from the fire brigade. I think they measured the speed. And of course, I didn't go to the fire brigade. It seemed to be the last person on the planet I would have gone to have got traffic speeding figures from. But no, silly me, that's where they came from. Those traffic calming measures have slowed things down. Now, even if you had a permanent speed camera there, you would have less crime. But that's because of collaborative working between Rydale Council, North Yorkshire County Council, and the Fire Brigade. And it took a lot of getting, it took, I don't know, best part of 8 years or whatever to get in there. Now, that hasn't made it perfect, but it has improved it.
I'd just add to that, just one update in relation to the North Yorkshire Fire and Rescue now comes under the Police and Fire. Yes, the Police and Fire Commissioner. There is, we are on the cusp of more collaborative work with the Fire Service. I do have a number of meetings diarised for discussing with the local Fire Service the way in which they can assist in community safety work in the local area, and you are correct that under the 95 Alive project they have the portfolio for assessing increases in speed through villages through the census, the machines they have for working data and census.
It was pre-Peace and Crime Commissioner, but it just seems strange to a peasant that, because you would have thought that traffic was police and therefore speed of traffic was police. And that, again, is back to the same problem of having different doors, and you go in the wrong door, and you never come out again, they don't get the right evidence. Martin, thank you so much. That has been very illuminative over and above the report. I'm sure you're looking forward to sitting there through the various audit reports we have. But we may not notice if you decide that now would be a very good time to go. Entirely up to you. You're very welcome if you want to stay. Lovely. Thanks, Martin.
No problem.
Much appreciated. Right, page 51. Thanks. Granthorne Audit Progress Report and Sector Update.
Thank you, Chair. So this is our regular progress report telling where we are in the audit process. And the sector update is, for your info, giving some key sector issues that's happening around the local government sector. So if I take you to page 54 of this of your pack, which gives you where we are in sort of financial statement audit, value for money and what we do in terms of outside that. In terms of the accounts audit, we issued the audit plan in the January audit committee, and which identified, you know, the key risks for the audit. And after that, we started our interim audit, I think second week of March, which is now substantially complete. And there's an update on that later on, which I'll go through. In terms of our reporting deadlines, we need to issue an opinion by end of July. We'll be starting the final audit of the accounts in June and July time, and report to you in July. In terms of value for money conclusion, again, we reported our key risk in terms of value for money, which highlighted as sort of overall governance and risk management. Again, we have we are continuing our work on that, and our audit opinion in July will sort of conclude on that work. In terms of other areas, Chao, we had a very constructive meeting with Stacey and Anton and the monitoring officer Anthony just last week. That's been very useful in terms of understanding what's happened, what are the key issues for the council, and also assessing our risks for our continuing audit. And we continue to obviously deal with, you know, the finance staff, and they have been very helpful during our, you know, interim audit in the last few weeks. We had a, you know, a workshop end of like February. Council Ed Javid participated, and it was like, you know, audit committee roles and responsibilities. There were about nine other clients came to that event, going through various, you know, risk management, governance, high level, you know, accounts stuff, and it was a good, it was an event that other, you know, members could, you know, share their thoughts and ask questions from us, the external auditor. And we thanked, Councillor Javid too, you know, who attended and who asked quite a lot of questions, and I hope that was useful for him. Page 55 is, you know, obviously where we are at the audit process. So we obviously feel it issued last year. Audit plan issued January 2019. And one of the key other sort of dates is, you know, as I mentioned, we have substantially completed the interim audit, and the process of discussing our findings with Anton and the team, and we will report those findings to this committee on the 13th of June. Then end of July, we'll be issuing our audit opinion and the value for money conclusion, and the audit process will be concluded in end of August. Page 56 and 57 obviously, you know, gives what we have done and where we are in terms of the conclusions and recommendations. We've gone through overall sort of control environment of the council's financial processes, and also including the governance arrangements to support that. And obviously, I can't sort of preempt, you know, what our reporting will be, but we need to finalize that with Anton, which will report in June. And also, we have done some early detailed testing on some of the, you know, work on, you know, payroll and you know, operating expenditure and income. Again, you know, Anton's staff had been, you know, very helpful and cooperative in what we have done to date. Sector update, I'm not going to go in detail, that's for, you know, members' info. But there's also, I would like to highlight this on page 61, this, you know, very relevant sort of topic about, you know, governance and risk management. I think that's one of the areas that we highlighted as a significant risk at Rydell, and it's I think interesting reading. Everything is, you know, useful reading, but I would not go in detail to expand those. But happy to take any questions from any of the content of the report.
Well, it doesn't look as though you've got any takers. And last time round, you had a queue of people asking questions. That's either good news or you silenced them all. I think it's fair to say that you've got in here, you've settled down, you've got the feel of where we are, but the important results of what's coming out of your audit will be into June, July, not tonight, as far as we're concerned as an audit committee.
Yeah, I think, we started our interim audit, 12th of March,
yeah.
And it has gone on, and we've substantially completed, but there are a few things that we'll be finalising and you know, agreeing with Anton and the team. And once we do that, I think it's a timing issue. Once we do that, we will. I know accounts closed down is end of May, so those recommendations will be captured by Anton and the team. But the reporting time is, it will be, you know, the next scrutiny committee, which is, I think, 13th of June.
Is there any change in the deadlines this year? Because your deadlines are, yours and Anton's deadlines for getting things done in end of years and audit have got tighter and tighter and tighter. Are they the same this year as they were last year, or have they given the screw another twist?
Same as last year, Chair. It's 31st July.
So it was a rush last year, but this year at least we're used to that speed of rush.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Oh, kind of the gun. I should show my gratitude that they haven't turned the thumbscrews one more. Yeah. I've no questions. All I would like to say to you, if I'm saying this now, because you may wish to, unless you wish to stay to the end, if you do wish to move, that will be absolutely acceptable. But thank you for your work since you've started with us. It's been very friendly, very supportive, and, you know, professional. So I'm very happy. And the question mark is over the councillors here as to whether or not we're back next year and whether or not we're on scrutiny if we are back next year. So we can thank you. You can look at us and wonder whether we'll be back here or we won't. Thank you ever so much. Yes, no, yes, quite. We didn't try not to get back, with the exception of Jeff, of course, who's trying to get out of it completely by not standing. And you have had some interesting financial positions, not produced by present company, that are with the council. I don't think anything's unsortable, but there has been, you know, the 2 million underspend, etc. That's the sort of thing that will change, hopefully, etc. Yeah. But again, thank you ever so much. It's been a pleasure. And we won't be in any way offended if you decide that it's an evening to travel home in the light rather than the dark. Oh, that's lovely. That's brilliant. We need to, this is where Will didn't give me a nudge, we need to, do we not, Will, move noting the report? There isn't a report to move noting the recommending it, but I think we do we not?
Yeah, just give me a note to it.
Yes, so can we vote to note? And just to keep the officers on their toes, would it be possible next year to have a single sheet? I don't know which of you three to look at for this, to make sure that next year we have it in there. Because you drive on between the Safer Rydale and the audit report and scratching around looking for the sheet that tells you the recommendation. Have I not pressed that? Sorry, Will.
That's unanimous.
Would have been concerning if it hadn't been, but we'd have coped with it. Right, we now move on to the next item, which is the third internal audit counter fraud progress reports. Stuart or Jonathan? Stuart.
Chair, if it's okay with members, I think in previous committees it's worked reasonably well if I introduce the internal audit part. Any questions then, and then pass over to Jonathan for any questions on the counter fraud side of things.
That's absolutely fine, as long as Will keeps me on my toes as to when we're taking a vote as to which bit's gone. It's worked perfectly before, so let's carry on with it.
No problem. Thank you, Chair. Just to highlight to members a couple of things in the progress report, and as usual, happy to take any questions at the end of this brief introduction. Is the third progress report from internal audit and counter fraud. In the July committee, we'll be providing the head of internal audit opinion, which draws the overall view of the head of internal audit and will provide members with the residual work that hasn't been done to the end of March. The work completed, we've gone into more detail in Appendix B, which is on page 78. There's been two audits that have been completed to final stage, revenue budgeting on page 78 and licensing on page 79. Just to work back a page, actually, to page 77, that gives the overview of the audits, the assurance levels and where the work is at. We're working with officers to complete our work by the end of April to draft status and then by the end of May to final status so that we can pull all that together in that head of internal audit opinion for the July committee. One or two on page 77 have moved on because this was dated 31st of March. So, for example, the fifth line down has a data protection and security visit where we finalised the report with Simon Copley and with Anton. And on one or two areas like payroll and personnel and creditors, they're in my inbox waiting for me to review them tomorrow. So Anton and other officers will be receiving some reports in the next couple of weeks. On the internal audit progress side of things, the only final thing to perhaps highlight is the follow-up of previous findings, which we refer to in paragraphs 10 to 13 on page 75. All throughout the year we are keeping a watch on previous recommendations when deadlines have expired and seeing where the council is in relation to adopting those. Sometimes we incorporate that into work because a number of audits will be done year on year and we can see what progress has been made as part of the work. In other areas we will do some follow-up work with officers to establish what, if anything, has been done to that work in previous years. There's nothing specific to highlight to members' attention at this point, but I'll provide a more detailed position of what actions are outstanding to the next committee. I've specifically highlighted just three in paragraph 12 on strategic income, contract management and data quality. It was more that these audits are from previous year and a couple of years ago, ones where we cannot conclude that the actions have been completed, but what we can see is the reasons for it. And in understanding where the council is at with its wider strategies and some of those areas on the risk register, I've got comfort that they're not being ignored, and that's the big risk with some findings, that they are being considered in an appropriate way, in addition with other areas, such as the potential for obviously a new corporate plan as a result of following the next round of elections and so on. So I highlight them because in part they are not complete, in part you will see them probably not complete as part of the next meeting, but also it's not something from a professional point of view where I've got significant concerns with, because officers, it's on officers' radar and it's not through ignorance that, or omission that these areas have not been followed up. So I think from my point of view, that's all in terms of the content from my thinking. I was always willing to answer it to the best of my ability any questions officers or members have.
Well, officers as well, if they have, now's the time to ask. Well, I've a comment to make, really, and that is I'm very glad that you're... we have limited assurance on revenue budgeting. Anything more optimistic than that would have left me incredibly nervous as to what was happening. But I have a lot of confidence that is improving, that control is improving compared with what it was. And you can't, if you came in, even pre-budget point, get the budget right and deliver it for next year when you don't know where the levers are to pull to control it. It's impossible. And I think Anton's done a superb job getting us to where we are, but on the time scale, you couldn't hope to get it completely sorted. And I've just one personal comment to make, Stuart. If you say you will see this in July, can you please look somewhere else rather than any one of us? Because it makes us all feel very uncomfortable, the assumption that we'll be here in July. So if you could speak to the ceiling when you refer to July, it would be most helpful. Thank you ever so much. We do we note at that point? Or do we have Jonathan into that as well? We do. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chair. I'm here to update you on counter-fraud progress. In fact, our end of year is the end of March, so we have ended our counter-fraud year on the financial year. Unfortunately, due to the timing of the committee, I couldn't quite get our end-of-year figures into this report. However, I can update you with them. We met our targets this year, which is pleasing. 60% of our investigations resulted positively, and we produced £24,600 of savings for the council in the last financial year. Our main work revolves around council tax support and council tax non-domestic rates, but we've also had a few other different types of frauds reported this year, which I've noted in the report. Finally, we were pleased to get a leaflet out in the council tax billing run in March. It's a way to communicate with members of the public to reassure them that the council is tackling fraud and to encourage them to report their concerns. That's all I have to say about the report, but happy to take any questions if you have them.
I have one straight in. You know what it's going to be, and that is, can we please have the carry forwards brought in so that the numbers can then be added up and carried on and compared? We really do need that.
Yes, we'll look at the numbers that we report, and I will make sure that you get the numbers that you
have. There is a number missing. It's not that you haven't got the number. You probably, if I went back to last year's papers, I would be able to find what the one for the previous year is. And once you've got the three carry-forward figures, it then makes sense. I think the leaflet into the council tax billing was incredibly useful. I think that's... just a reminder to, you know, encourage people to report suspected fraud. And the question I've got in relation to this, and I think we're back to the comment we made last year in relation to who gets the money out of this. It says amount of savings, £24,600 to the end of the year, not on here. Is that the total council tax, or is that Rydale's part of the council tax?
That is the total amount brought back to the council, and obviously the council has to give some of the council.
I thought it was that, and on that basis, and I'm going down Stuart's route now here, if I'm here next year or the members of the committee here next year, I think it's something we should just give a push to, because I have no problem with the county getting money, but I have every problem with 80% of it going to the county, and we're paying 100% of the cost of doing it. It seems a little imbalanced, but something to look at, and for officers to note that we need that carried forward into next year. Lovely. Thank you to the pair of you. Anybody else while I've been waffing on got any questions? No. I'm just about to. No, it's good when I can start getting people telling me what I have to do on both sides at the same time. That's good. Can we note the report, please? No, the two are combined. Did we not? Ah, useful. Can we go back and do that? Should we do it now before we forget?
Well, that one was unanimous.
That one was unanimous. And can we now go back to the safer ride, Earl? I need keeping it under control, but if people aren't doing it, what hope is there? Safer ride, Earl. Please vote to note it. Do I not do mine?
It's also unanimous.
Item 10, internal audit, counter fraud and information governance plans. Stuart.
Thank you, Chair. I suppose this brings the plan full circle, because at the previous committee in January we started the formal planning cycle to create the plan by having a conversation with members and highlighting some areas that could potentially be included in the plan. Since then we've done the planning that we needed to, had regular conversations with people such as Anton and Stacey, met with a few other officers as well to try and gather as much knowledge on the key risks relevant to the council. And what we've done is pull that together from the internal audit side on pages 90 through to 93. In terms of the content in the report, if I can just highlight, I suppose it's a similar kind of format to previous years, so we break down into it aspects such as the risks that members will see on the risk register, that's on page 91. And just break it down into individual audits with an estimated allocation of time and scope of work that we will be thinking to do. To highlight, the plan is based on a total number of days of 225, which is the same as in previous years. In terms of individual audits, I won't go through many, but I just will highlight, link to what I mentioned at the outline, that on page 93, there's an audit under the operational audit section covering policy framework, which was one that was highlighted as part of conversations here. And there's aspects of other conversations we've had in that meeting and elsewhere that you may see in terms of working the plan, things like revenue and capital budgeting, building on the work of previous years. And in that particular one, it's one where Anton and I have discussed, and we really want to get well beneath the surface of the quality of what's in place rather than just things happening or things being monitored. Are people actually highlighting variances early enough, being critical in their thinking sufficiently, and so on and so on, and obviously expanding a scope into capital budgeting, following on from just focusing on the revenue side in 18-19. In terms of the process or the audits in the plan, I'm happy to answer any questions any member may have.
Any questions? Well,
firstly, Stuart, delighted you picked up on the policy framework from the conversations last time. I think that's incredibly important. The only question I've got is on page 93, I think it is as well, relationships and agreements with other bodies. References specifically arrangements with Scarborough Borough Council. Does that mean that we won't be looking at arrangements with anybody else, or not?
Anton, would you like to just mention something? I'll initially say that was in terms of the conversation. We didn't want to tread on the toes of this committee because we know there's aspects of the scrutiny work that's going on with aspects of what's with North Yorkshire. And it was raised specifically by the planning process with Anton and Stacey to look at Scarborough. We can look further than that, and ideally what I want to try and do is a risk assessment at that point in time, so the plan allows us the flexibility to do that. It was one of those areas where it was trying to prioritise our time, and through conversations with officers, they felt that there was a number of areas with the relationships with Scarborough that would be a good use of our time. So whether or not we can expand that, in theory we can, no problem at all. It's whether in practice it's the best use of our time, or there are emerging risk areas from residual North Yorkshire arrangements covering many areas that Anton and others and ourselves would find of use. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it doesn't rule out looking at other partnerships. We did ask for a number of areas to look initially specifically, and we use the phrase deep dives elsewhere as well to go into some detail. We have some concerns about some of these areas. There's a similar issue around health and safety, and under the resilience and capacity, that's the risk. Health and safety, I think we agreed at this committee it was probably the number one risk, so we want to target the resources there. With Scarborough, there are some emerging issues there that, frankly, we're just not sure what's going on and could do with a bit. So that's you get my drift.
Thank you, Chair. I was only to see, as long as that conversation's taking place, that was the point of the question. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to add one, Stuart, and it's in relation to your commentary, Scarborough and partnership working and scrutiny wanting to look into, and I wish you more success than we had. I think you'll get more success than we had, because the goalposts weren't moving when we were trying to look at it, the contract between Rydale and North Yorkshire in relation to the Chief Executive's post, the contract between Rydale and North Yorkshire and HR, the contract between Rydale and Scarborough and Finance. And faster than we could look at it, because we're a committee that meets, even as a working party, you're not going to meet more than once a fortnight. So we met once a fortnight, and it wasn't the goalpost moving in this case, it was the whole pitch was moving. And on that, don't apologise for that being on the verbal record, but the pitch was moving quite justifiably, because things were being found out in here, in those sort of areas, as to how things were or weren't happening, and therefore things needed to be moving far too rapidly to be scrutinised as to what it should be. And again, I would hope that in the future the scrutiny committee will look into those areas, and it does no harm at all if internal audit has looked at it. In fact, it may make our job easier, it wouldn't be a question of treading on toes. So the handbrake went on. We kicked off looking into the chief executive's arrangements, etc. We couldn't. It was only too new and it wasn't completed, believe it or not. So they put the handbrake on. So we said, OK, fine, we'll look at HR. And HR had come in and done all sorts of work in here, and the need for the contract size had changed. The size and shape of what was needed had changed. So we put the handbrake on. And then we started to look at, I think it was Scarborough next, was it Becky, as a potential route to look at. And again, things were changing. So we just said, we're not going to put park it now, we're just going to leave it, and then if the next committee wants to look into it. That wasn't a question of giving up. It was impossible for us to scrutinise something that was changing so quickly that we would have been moving slower than it would. And looking at what is happening in relation to Scarborough, and I mentioned in the pre-meeting, and I will throw to you now, I can't remember where it is and it doesn't matter, but there was in relation to licensing, which none of us are on, there was a question, the legal questions for licensing will be handled by Scarborough. Well, that's the first I'd heard of it. It may be brilliant. It seems strange for the long term. It might be fine in the crisis short term when we are short of people in the legal department here. But it needs looking at, because it can't make sense to have the whole of licensing in here and the legal bit for it done in a different council. So, yes, I mean, it's not treading on our toes at all. That's parked up. You've just driven past us, not over us. It's absolutely fine. Anybody else got anything to add or say? In which case, can I thank the pair of you for working with you in the last year? It's been absolutely superb. And I think the biggest thing, and this is not a backhanded compliment, I have liked the way that you have taken criticism, questioning, whatever, taken it as a positive, moved things a little bit, or told us we were wrong, and then... But well, it does occur. Members can be wrong occasionally, Anton, but, you know, it is rare. Told us where we were wrong, agreed with us, changed things, moved things, and it's been a very good working partnership. And, you know, thank you both ever so much. It's been very, very useful.
I don't really need to say much about the prod plan.
Your floor is yours.
So I'll take it as...
The floor is yours. In the plan, is there anything you wish to add?
We have the same amount of days as last year, 105 days. We have 5 areas of work, and we will do our best to manage those days to get the best results for this council.
And exactly the same applies to yours. Absolutely superb. With one question mark, which we've given you again tonight, just to show that we haven't quite gone to sleep as we come to the end. Anybody else, anything to add or say or think or do? I think we need to, what do we do with that one? Is it, no? We've got a question.
Well, no, no question, it's just an observation,
no,
Chair.
No, please give me an observation.
The last meeting, there was a document appeared on the report that I think we all picked up on what a fabulous example it was. It was the reds and yellows and greens and things. Yeah. I think page 77 of this report is something else that we all ought to carry a mental picture of in terms of looking forward about the way things coming to meetings should be presented. And that's just an observation.
Where is it?
I think it's 77, John. I may be wrong.
Sorry, Will.
Yeah, it is. Appendix A, page 77. If every time we came to meetings we got a piece of paper as simple as that that told us where we were, I just think it would make life much easier.
Where was the recommendation? Thank you, Will. Any more for any more? God, Jeff, you've been very quiet. Not your normal character. Oh, he's yes, quite.
All I would say is to you people in front of us here is that the things have changed. Sorry, should I put this on to speech?
Well, yes, you'll get the hang of it eventually.
Yeah, I will do, yeah. I've been here too long. I'd just like to say that over this last period with you, that things are changing and everything seems to be coming. Like I would like to have seen it as more businesslike, and I wish you every success and hope that it will carry on this way and that you can get, and it's going to kill me now, is you can get the overview and scrutiny to work like an overview and scrutiny in a proper logical manner, which it is moving that way. I'm training him well, I'm hoping he'll carry on.
I think I would be rude not to thank Jeff for his support over the last 2 years. If it wasn't Jeff, I'd be saying it's been absolutely brilliant. It's been teamwork. And considering we set off, I would say, poles apart as far as the world was concerned, it's been very, very good. And can I... close the meeting, or do we need to, have we got another one? We need to vote on this. Let's do that one first. Come on, you're not keeping up. I need to be told to note things. This one's longer than that. We recommend that the internal audit plan for 1920 be approved and not and the counter fraud and information governance plans be noted. So we have at least got one bit of noted. It's my overview and scrutiny training says anything that's only to be to noted, you probably shouldn't have it on the agenda. And that would be very worrying because we'd have no agenda left, basically.
And that's unanimous.
That's unanimous. That's very disconcerting. I think we've had them all unanimous tonight except for one abstention who was unable to vote on it because he wasn't here. Can I apologise for my failings during the year, rambling on and whatever other mistakes I've made? I apologise for those, but can I thank the whole of the committee and the officers for the work from the last year, in fact for the last 2 years. It has been an absolute superb team, everybody pulling together, working together, achieving things. And you are right, Jeff, completely right. I hope it has changed in those 2 years in the right direction. But I do believe very strongly that it's still got a long way to go. And my one regret this year is I couldn't attend your meeting for members and chairs of scrutiny committees. I'm very sorry. I wasn't wanting to be polite and put my apologies in. I was wanting to be there and rude rather than away and polite.
We missed you.
Yeah. Lovely stuff. Meeting closed.